We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Congrats to Elijah from Atlanta. He won the Travis Scott ticket.
Way to go. Way to go, Elijah.
It's happening State Farm Arena March the 22nd. We've got more tickets available for you coming up later today. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Randy McMichael. This hour brought to you by Right From The Heart and rightfromtheheart.org. Falcons made a little move, Randy, as we kick off the lunchtime hour here just about 20 minutes ago. I think Tanitra had this on her last Sports Flash, but Luke Stocker, the tight end, played his college ball at Tennessee. Yeah. He has spent some time with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for 6 years, was with the Tennessee Titans. Last year, he has now inked a 2-year deal with the Atlanta Falcons.
Upgrade. You know, upgrade. And it's like I was talking to Mike Conti out in the up in the bullpen. It's like, is this like the third year in a row they try to bring in a complimentary tight end to Austin Hooper? And it is. But Luke's a different breed. He's a very good blocker. He's a guy that has some ability to run after the catch, unlike the last couple guys they have brought in.
Seems like Tampa has had some success with him in goal line situations, not just as a blocker, but as a receiver. His ability to be able to shield himself, to be able to catch the ball in tight spaces,
yeah,
has been a positive for him.
He's a good player. And you look at what Tampa, I mean, they got Cameron Brate and they got OJ down there. So, I mean, he was kind of expendable, but, I mean, he is not a bad player. He's an upgrade of what you've had here at that position, trying to find a complimentary piece to go with Austin Hooper. So, I mean, I think it's a win for him. As far as, you know, upgrading at that position.
Interesting. Of course, with his time in Tampa, this ties back to something that you and I had spoken about before, both with the other stops for Luke Stocker in his career. We talked about familiarity. Well, he's a guy that has been around Mike Mularkey with
and
the Titans.
And Dirk Cutter.
And Dirk Cutter, yes. In Tampa. So there's some familiarity for him and this system, yeah, which, again, opens the door for him. A couple other things going on we want to touch on as we take another look at the headlines. We just finished up our conversation with Mike Conti of the Atlanta United broadcast crew. A 1-0 win last night over Monterey, which, again, good win for the Falcons. That is a team in Monterey that is favored by a lot of people to win the CONCACAF. So for Atlanta United to come away with a 1-0 victory, step back into MLS play on Sunday against Philly, another organization that you should be able to have some success with. Hopefully, Randy, this you can build off what happened last night.
That's the biggest thing, is building off of it. Just like Conti said, I mean, if you go by what, you know, how they just played last night, and then you go and lay a dud against Philly. I mean, that's just going to be, you know, that's going to be a devastating blow to this squad. But, I mean, just the energy. I didn't know it was 10 years since the MLS team has beaten that squad. And, I mean, if you looked at how United played, how can they be beaten? I mean, of course, they're not going to go undefeated this year or whatever. I mean, they already lost the game, but they're not going to, you know, win the rest of their games. But at the same time, I mean, you saw the potential of how great this team can be. And one of the most important pieces that just got here is PT Martinez. How comfortable does he get over this time period that they're going to have off after Sunday? And I know the biggest thing that I've been hearing, I heard from Conte here from Longshore, is that his conditioning. How soon can he get that conditioning going so he can be at his best?
Atlanta Hawks with a nice win last night. They beat Memphis 132-111. Memphis pretty much never in this. I mean, the Hawks pretty much controlled it right from the opening tip. Hawks been the highest scoring team in the NBA since the All-Star break. I think they've now equaled their win total from last year. And, Randy, as you and I talked about earlier, the Hawks are not – look, is this a playoff team? No. But what this is a team that during a rebuild has become at least fun to watch.
I think that's the biggest thing, Chris. And when you're talking about how they want to build this squad, they want to build it through the draft and all these things. They got a great piece when they went out and got John Collins at number 19 out of Wake Forest. I think it was 19. And then you try and find – because John is playing right below an all-star level. I think in the next couple of years he will be an all-star. But then you go out and get a marquee player as far as name-wise, and he's been playing well as a rookie, and he's starting to get you more national exposure. You see – more of Hawks highlights now on ESPN and stuff, because most of them involve him or him throwing a lob to John Collins or something like that. And you saw it last night, just the chemistry that these two young guys have when you throw the lob three quarters court and John Collins goes and gets it. So it's not where you want to be, but you can tell, like you said earlier in the show, you remember November, we were like, what the heezy is going on? And they've gotten better and better and better. And as the minutes have increased, their play has gotten better, and you can't eliminate Kevin Herter. He's a guy that coming in, you know, they were like, he's a swing man that can play both sides of the ball, can shoot the ball, and he's a guy that was started off a little late because he was injured, but now it seems like he's found his groove, and Amari Spellman seems like he might be a good rotational player.
I think the thing that gives you hope and promise for the Hawks, especially with Young and Herter, you're talking about two guys that are just exceptional passers.
Yes.
And you know, Harper and I talked about this on a Saturday a couple of weeks ago. As a matter of fact, we had Mike Conti was here, and Mike stepped in and spent a few minutes with us, and we talked a little bit about the Hawks and the fact, and this was right, this was, I guess, All-Star Weekend or maybe right after All-Star Weekend, and I asked Mike about, you know, what Trae Young has done, his performance in the Futures game, in the All-Star, his performance, you know, taking part in the skills competition, what that means for the Hawks brand. Because as we know, Randy, this has been a town that, you know, a lot of guys in the NBA, a lot of them live here.
Yes.
A lot of them want to come here and hang out. They want to party
in
this city, but they don't want to play here. You hope Trae Young becomes the guy that people want to play with.
Right.
I think that's you that people go, I want to go be with this guy because I'm seeing what he does. Because his ability to pass the ball, especially in traffic, and put it in the perfect spot is, I don't know that I've seen anybody as electric as that in traffic, and all of a sudden the ball squirts out and it's perfect to whoever the open shooter is.
His vision is unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And that's just a natural gift that he has. I mean, that's his God-given ability that he has. And his shooting, I mean, of course, it's been up and down and all that, and it'll get more consistent as he, you know, as the more games he plays in the and how he spends his offseason is so huge in the development of a basketball player. What do you do in the summer when nobody's watching in the gym? How many shots are you getting up and all these things? And Trae, to me, seems like he wants to be great. And I love him because he got some dog in it. He might be the smallest dude on the court majority of the time, but he's not backing down. He's not backing down, and he loves the challenge.
About an hour and, what, an hour and a half or so from right now, Hawks head coach Lloyd Pierce will join us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, let's see. We've talked about Atlanta United. We talked about the Hawks. We mentioned the Falcons and their free agency news. We mentioned the fact they've signed Luke Stocker. They released Ryan Schrader yesterday. The new NFL year went into effect at 4 o'clock, so Vic Beasley, that was yesterday at 4, so Vic Beasley's fifth-year option at $12.8 million, fully guaranteed. That now kicks in. Ryan Schrader gets released. Also, Marvin Hall, Falcons wide receiver, primarily the kick returner, posted on Instagram yesterday saying his farewell to the Falcons, so I guess they are parting ways. He posted on Instagram, but did anybody really see it?
Yeah, because went it down yesterday, and all in the world was wrong. But I thought they might try and keep Marvin around. Now it just lets you know they got to add some more receivers. You know, there's not a lot of depth behind your first three guys, so you want to get some more guys in, which I expect. You know, with the draft and you know, undrafted free agent type guys, see if somebody can fit and stick. They need to find a returner. They need a returner. I mean, I thought Andre Roberts, I thought he would be a hit here, but I think he's going to Buffalo.
Yep, Roberts is signed with Buffalo.
He's going to Buffalo.
When he came, I thought, okay, there's the next Devin Hester. This guy can be here for a while.
He wasn't that good.
He could be a guy at least for a couple of years anyway, and that didn't happen.
He played his butt off last year for the Jets. You know,
he did.
Morphed into a Pro Bowl. So I was like, well, you would like a guy like that, but they got to find a returner. Quick, fast, in a hurry. Well, wouldn't Miko Hardman look good in the Falcon uniform, huh? Real good. You know, fourth, fifth round. I can see that.
He could be there.
I can see that.
He could be there. And that's going to be his niche.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be – oh, Miko's going to be – he's going to be a kick returner, a punt returner. He's going to be your starter from day one.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Who else you like out of Georgia in the draft? How much does the bad 40 time for Elijah Holyfield?
It hurts him. It hurts. Yeah. It hurts. And he has to do well at the pro day. Him and Isaac, they got to do better. I tell you, a guy who you hear and read about is Riley Ridley. It's like, like he did enough in Georgia, but he didn't do a lot. And what I mean by that is, when he got his opportunity to make plays, he made the plays. But why wasn't he giving more opportunities? Because if you're that good, you should be able to be like, here's our go-to guy. But you saw Holloman and those guys. But yeah, I mean, some people even think Ridley can maybe get in the first round. So I was like, wow. You know, you're a part-time starter in college. But, I mean, he has all the physical tools, though.
Yeah.
He has all the tools.
And that's so much of it is based off of how you measure, you know, how you grade out. I mean
it's amazing how a stopwatch can determine how far you go, instead of just watching to see if the guy can play football on tape.
Falcons also pick up two interior offensive linemen in James Carpenter and Jamon Brown. Carpenter was in Seattle when Dan Quinn was there, as the Falcons continue to work on solving the issues with that offensive line. Braves playing well down in the Grapefruit League, even though they lost yesterday 8-4. That did not stop Ronald Acuna from continuing to absolutely light it up with the way this guy has played through the Grapefruit League. He's hitting, 429, 430. He has been fantastic, and the Braves have played well. Not that it matters.
Right.
Because it's March. Doesn't matter yet, but the Braves have played well.
They've been well, you know, and we laughed with M.O., you know, before the show. It's like, oh, my God, you know, because of what they did in the Grapefruit League, it's going to transfer into the regular season. But, I mean – I'm encouraged by this team, even though you didn't make the major moves at some of the positions that you felt they should have upgraded, mainly the pitching staff or whatever, pitching staff, reliever, all that. I still have confidence in this squad. I mean, yeah, you look at the Phillies, what they did, and Nats, and, you know, the Mets have gotten better. But, you know, the Braves ain't no slouch now. I mean, they have
– No, this is a club that won 90-something games last year.
Last year was not a fluke.
No.
Last year was not a fluke.
And they, you know, the good, I guess you can take solace in the fact that they are built to win long term. Last year was not a flash in the pan because of the young talent. These guys will be around for a while. Also, SEC, ACC basketball action going on. Georgia last night eliminated by Missouri in the SEC, 71-61. Georgia finishes with 12 losses in their last 13 games. Coach Tom Crean said after the game last night that he felt like his team left it all out there on the floor.
That's supposed to encourage me. You're 2-16, man. All right, 2-16. And how many of those games were lost in the last second of a game because you couldn't execute or get the ball in bounds or get off a good shot? I mean, Georgia basketball, and I know it's hard, you know, when it's a football school, and I get all that. And they hired Tom Crean not for this past year, but for the future, you know, to get guys like Anthony Edwards in and those young men, which he has done. But that was just pathetic. I mean, and I was laughing with Tanitra. I mean, they didn't lose as bad as they lost last time to LSU. When you turn on the game and you're like, hold on, is that the halftime score? And that was the final score? And so it wasn't that bad, but, I mean, I had no confidence they were going to beat Missouri. And Missouri's god-awful. But at least they put up a good effort this time, Chris. So,
and Anthony Edwards will be in a Georgia uniform next year. And as you and I talked about earlier, this is the sport where if you can get the one guy, he can turn it around. At least for a year.
At least for a year, exactly.
But for a year.
Or a semester and a half. Semester and a half, you know, yeah. A semester and a half, and then, you know, they'll move on from there.
Talk a little more college hoops. Take a look back at what happened yesterday in both the SEC and the ACC. We'll also get into an article from the AJC on college basketball in Atlanta. It's not good. A little surprising. We'll get to it next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
I feel like we competed hard. It came down to free throws and just opportunities we didn't execute on. That really kind of bit us towards the end of the game. But I feel like everybody gave it their all. We played hard, and none of us didn't want to stop playing basketball today. Coach definitely didn't want to stop coaching us today. At this point, man, we got to move on and just look forward to the future.
Jordan Harris of the Georgia Bulldogs as they went down yesterday in SEC tournament play to Missouri. 71-61 was the final. Georgia finished 12 losses in their last 13 games. Georgia 11-21 on the year. Last time Georgia lost 21 games in a season, you'd have to go back to 1955-1956 that season. That was
a long time ago.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
It has been a while. By the way, real quick, there's some stuff going on in college hoops that I kind of want to get to, and Deshaun Tate's going to join us here in about 20 minutes, and we'll talk more about the SEC and the ACC tournament and some bracket projections coming up with Deshaun. But Zion Williamson,
yeah,
he will be on the floor tonight for Duke when they take on Syracuse in the ACC tournament.
Well, this was kind of like the target. Went into my ACC tournament and listening and reading this morning, and they're playing Syracuse, and they're saying because of the zone that Syracuse plays, it won't be that much strain on him. He'll be the middle guy that flashes in the middle and all those things. But, I mean, good for him, man. I didn't think that he would sit out the rest of the season and just go ahead and just have this as a wash. And you look at not necessarily on the offensive side for Duke, you look defensively how they've been since he's been gone. And he's a rim protector. He's a guy that can steal the basketball.
They're a little soft in the middle without him out there.
Yeah, so good for him. Expect some big things from him tonight. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, and again, we'll have Deshaun on in a little bit, what kind of team can beat Duke? Because the only team that's beaten Duke this year, if I'm not mistaken, that when they're fully whole, is the Gonzaga. When they lost earlier to Gonzaga, that's the last team that's beaten them without one of their big guns in the game.
A couple other things I did want to make mention of. Will Wade, the suspended LSU coach, has released a statement saying that with the benefit of a week to consider the circumstances, I believe university officials should allow me to resume my duties.
I agree. The man coach. Let him coach. Why not?
Well, you remember, what was it, about this time last year, maybe 50 weeks ago, we were talking about the situation with Sean Miller at Arizona.
Yes.
And DeAndre Ayton, and people said, Miller's going to be fired, and DeAndre Ayton will never play another game in college.
And what happened?
Ayton missed one game,
okay,
and I think Miller missed, was it one game or two games? It wasn't much,
and he's still there.
And he's still the coach there.
And again, the rumors are coming up about him again. Is he going to be out there because, you know, who they're talking about, maybe Luke Walton going to take that job or the UCLA job? So, I mean, I get the premises of what goes on with the FBI involved in all this. I don't understand why they're involved in it. You know, like, okay, the youngin' want to take some loot. Help his folks out while he go play college basketball. What's the crime in that?
I got no problem.
What's the crime in that?
I mean, I got no problem. Look, it's been going on. It's been going on. You know what was the guy's name out in L.A. for John Wooden? Sam Gilbert,
dude.
Wasn't Gilbert carrying a bag of money around?
I mean, if you got a bag, man, at least have a good one. But I mean, we know this that men's basketball is the most corrupt business in sports in this country. I mean, it is bad.
Are you shocked to find out that the shoe companies, and right now I say companies, right now it's only one shoe company that's involved in this
that got caught?
Yeah, right? Yeah. But are you surprised to find out that the shoe companies are involved in it?
No,
I'm not either.
No,
why? I'm not either.
No.
Because they want to – what do they want? They want the big names wearing their brand.
When they come
so when they get to the association.
Yes. Of course.
That's when you rake it in.
Again, when we were talking about the whole baseball thing, what is it about again? Money. Everything is about making more and more of the dollar bill.
I have to chuckle. Poor Bruce Pearl down at Auburn, he's had to place another assistant basketball coach on administrative leave. Mm-hmm. Ira Bowman because he was apparently involved in a $300,000 bribery scheme when he coached at Penn. At Penn, Randy. This was going on at Penn.
Bruce Pearl, he's kind of like Coach Herrick when he came to Georgia.
Oh,
he's going to do some good things. He's going to get some players in there. But when you leave, banners are going to be missing, and there will be records that will not count.
You know, and he just had to fire Chuck Person,
yeah,
who was a former Auburn great and was a guy that I know they were excited down there about having on as a part of that staff. They had to fire him because of his involvement in this federal case. Now the guy they hired from Penn, of all places, he gets suspended because of his involvement in it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Herrick, when he came to Georgia, we're going to win some games. Now, after he leaves, you know, some stuff's going to be vacated. What do you think is going to happen to Bruce Pearl?
You know, that situation with him at Tennessee,
you remember that?
It was, yeah, and it was not – they fired him because he lied. If he would have, when the NCAA pulled him in to that meeting and said, did you have a barbecue at your house and was this kid – who ended up going to Ohio State, was he in attendance? And Bruce Pearl said, no, he was not. And then the NCAA later pulls out a picture that had been taken of the kid and said, yes, he was. And Pearl, to his own credit now, later on, I think he got a little bit of a guilty conscience in figuring out what was going on, and Bruce Pearl comes back to the NCAA and he goes, yeah, I lied. I shouldn't have done that. I lied. But at that point, his goose was cooked.
Well, in that situation, he would have been cooked if he were told the truth. So, hey, deny.
That was his deny. That's what he. And you know, if there is a guy that could, and he stepped into that role at Tennessee at the time when, you know, Tennessee football was still Tennessee football. Mm-hmm. You know, when he got there, they hadn't quite started. The downhill slide for them began right after he arrived on campus.
So is he a jinx or something? Because Auburn, ever since he's been in Auburn.
Well, maybe there's something to that. But I will say this, and I don't know that he's done it as well at Auburn as he did in Knoxville, but he was able to energize a fan base around a program that, look, they've got some basketball history and tradition there at Tennessee. The same
Women's.
Way, you know, well, they have it in the men, too. You know, when you talk about Ernie and Bernie and those guys back in the 70s, and, you know, Jerry Green got them to a Sweet 16 there. And so there was some success prior to Bruce Pearl coming, but he was able to get people excited about it. Yeah. And he was beloved.
Chris, I'm drawing a blank, the player that went down from New York to Tennessee basketball. It'll come to me in a second, because – When they were really good, who was that guy? He came from New York, probably in the early 80s, 70s, somewhere in that area. It'll come to me.
Yeah, Tennessee had Dell Ellis.
Dell Ellis, that's who it was. Dell Ellis, yeah.
Yeah.
Dell Ellis.
I mean, Dell Ellis was he was the guy. And they had some, I think if you, I think they're second to Kentucky in regular season and tournament titles. Mm-hmm. And they've got a chance now. This year.
You believe in this squad this year?
Here's what scares me about them. I just don't know that they're, and we'll talk to Deshaun about it. I don't know that they're deep enough. I think 1-5, I think they can run with anybody 1-5.
Right.
The question comes in is when you have to go 6-9. Uh-huh. I don't know that there's, I don't know how I feel about LSU right now with a suspended coach and an assistant take. You know, what's that? When it gets down to crunch time late in that game, what's that huddle going to be like without Will Wade?
Well, if you listen to, you know, when they actually won the SEC regular season title and you listen to the presser, they won because of what he taught them. You know, the typical thing. Now, what would happen if they lost? And it would have been like, well, we lost our coach and that's why we lost and all this stuff. So I don't know how to judge LSU right now. I don't trust Tennessee, you know. And as soon as I say that, they'll come back and they'll make a run all the way through the tournament.
So who is it? Because no team past a four seed has won the SEC tournament since they kind of reset the tournament back in 2012. You've got to be in the top four. So is it Kentucky?
I think you got to go with Kentucky. I think if you look at overall talent, I think the most overall talented team in the SEC. Tennessee, the reason I like Tennessee is because I like upperclassmen in tournament time. I'm a big, big believer in guys who've been together and have been through those grinds. And, you know, we can't, because a lot of them can't leave, but we're here for our senior year together. See, I like those kind of guys. That's what I love about Tennessee. But, I mean, you look overall talent, and it's not the most talented team that Calipari's had at Kentucky. But they're pretty damn good, though.
Yeah. No, they are. Yeah. They are. They are. And that may be the game that decides it when Tennessee and Kentucky meet, which I think would come up. Is that tomorrow or would that be Saturday? I think that would be Saturday. But that would be one of the two semifinal matchups, I guess, on Saturday. So if that happens, that will be that may be the game that determines who wins the SEC tournament. Best cities for college basketball, Wallet Hub, who I had to look up. It's a personal finance website, Randy. Okay. I saved you the trouble of Googling that.
I appreciate that.
Wallet Hub did the rankings of 289 U.S. cities. Best cities for college basketball, Atlanta ranked 192nd. They use the criteria, and there's more than this, but team performance, fan engagement, season ticket prices, among others, were the things they used to come up with this ranking. No surprise, Lawrence, Kansas.
They got an NFL.
Durham, North Carolina.
Okay.
Los Angeles, East Lansing, Michigan, and Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean.
The Blue Bloods.
The Blue Bloods, exactly.
The Blue Bloods.
Exactly. Lawrence, Kansas did not surprise me. Ain't nothing to do in there, but, you know.
That's right. Yeah, but hoop.
Ain't got nothing to do but play hoops. And you got less miles now. You know. Other than that, I mean, okay, cool.
Chew some grass.
That's it. Durham, self-explanatory.
Yep.
Self-explanatory.
Yeah, same thing with Chapel Hill, East Lansing.
East Lansing.
We know that.
L.A.
And Los Angeles, you got UCLA.
Exactly. So, and we said we're at 192.
Yeah, Atlanta's at 192. Now, you go look at the NBA TV ratings for this city. Through the freaking roof.
Yeah, but we talk about
college basketball. Not so much. Deshaun Tate covers college basketball for Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He'll be on with us next. We'll get to Brian Jordan in about a half hour from now as well. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And they're very long, just like Syracuse, you know.
This is Tate's Take with Deshaun Tate, featuring NCAA college basketball on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and online at 929thegame.com. Chris Goforth, Randy McMichael with you this afternoon. And joining us in the studio, Deshaun Tate.
My guy. Sparty.
He's over there listening to Randy Mac, man. My boy Mac hating on me and stuff.
I wasn't hating on nobody. You just talking about some AMO. You got my intro music over there? Like, are you a wrestler coming down the aisle or something?
as long as it's March, maybe.
I mean, it's his month. He comes styling and profiling. I'm surprised he doesn't have a Ric Flair robe on. He wants pyrotechnics. I mean, it's March. This is Christmas for Tate, so he's all up in his way right now.
Well, I gave you guys all your football. Everybody talking about Odell Beckham this and Antonio Brown that. Can I just have my little 31 days? I only get 31 of them. You got 11 other months. Can I have my one, please? And thank you.
We're going to give you about 14 minutes.
Okay, that works.
So we just need your best stuff for 14 minutes. Listen, I want to start with the SEC tournament that's happening right now. Deshaun, Randy and I, we were kind of talking about this tournament and how pretty much if you don't finish in the top four in the SEC, you got no shot at being able to win the tournament. Nobody outside of the top four has done it since they restructured things back in 2012. So who's the best team right now? You've got Kentucky's Kentucky. There's Tennessee that has been ranked number one this year. You've got LSU that won the regular season. It is in the number one seed. Who's the best team in the SEC?
The best team itself, I think, is Tennessee. They've been the most consistent all year long. I know that LSU kind of came on late and ended up winning at a time where Tennessee ended up taking some of their losses in a way that it just so happened to have worked out. But I think all across the board, I think that they're the best team. Now, do I think that they have the best coach? No, I don't actually think that. Do I think they have the best talent? No, I don't think that either. But I think just from top to bottom, starting first game of the season all the way up until this point, they are the best team in the SEC right now.
They're a matchup problem based on what they can put on the floor. They can create a problem for you defensively to try to match up with Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams and Jordan Bone and those guys.
Yeah, they do. I mean, when you're looking at the way that their bigs can step out and shoot, I mean, Admiral Schofield is not a small guy. You know, and they got the experienced teams. I was listening to you guys in the segment earlier, and I heard Randy Mack bring up a very good point in saying that the experience is what really matters, especially this time of the year in March. So They have that, and I think that that's the biggest difference, man. Because, I mean, look at Kentucky. Kentucky's got a really good coach. They've got outstanding talent, as they do every single year. They don't have the most, you know, experience, which they never do. If you're a junior at Kentucky, you're probably like a fifth or a six-year senior almost at a program like Kentucky. But, you know, in the end, that's what they have. And when you have a player that's the player of the year in Grant Williams and Jordan Bone, and like you said, they're top five, but they've got some guys that come off the bench that are not necessarily the most talented guys, but they play their role extremely well. Some of the best role players in the country.
Deshaun, you told us, you're the first one to tell me out there that the big dog is playing tonight for Duke, Zion Williams. What does that do for them as far as defensively? Because me and Chris were talking about it. I mean, offensively, okay, but I'm talking about defensively. It seems like they're getting pushed around a little bit more.
Well, Duke is the number one shot blocking team in the country, and it's because they have the number one shot blocker in the country now back healthy. You know, when you talk about what he brings to the table, there's a reason why Duke looks like a totally different team when he's not out there. They're 3-3 without him, and it's not just what he necessarily does, but the way that his energy is kind of pulled off of other guys pull off of his energy. He gets guys pumped and ready. When you think about Zion Williamson in transition, Duke, that's the type of game that they like to play. When you have guys that are ready to lock up and try to, you know, force some turnovers on defense so that they can get the ball out to a Zion Williamson for that fast break dunk, which is what everybody wants to see and what everybody gets excited for. When he's not on the floor, guys don't typically they kind of come off like they're not exactly sure if that's something that they're going to be missing when he's not on the floor. And so I think him coming back is his energy, gets on the ground after loose balls, gives you opportunity and creates second chance points and all those types of things. And it's the things that don't show up on the stat sheet that I don't think people really pay nearly as much attention to for Zion.
ACC tournament underway today. Virginia out to an early 11-4 lead on NC State. They're about 5.5 minutes or so into the first half of that one. How many teams get in out of the Atlantic Coast Conference?
I would imagine every bit of a good, I'd say eight. I'd say seven for sure, but I think that, you know, an eighth team can push. NC State is going to be right there, but they still have some work to do to win at least one more game. And that still won't be a lock for them, but I think considering all the things that it'll give them a very good chance at it, at getting into the NCAA tournament. But, you know, there's still so much basketball that's still left to play. It's really kind of hard to say right now. But I think at this point, I think the safest bet would be seven, but I think they can really push eight. It's just kind of unfortunate with Gonzaga losing the other night, you know, what that did for the bubble teams like NC State.
You took my next question, because you talked about it yesterday, and I was saying even though Gonzaga did lose to St. Mary's like yesterday, they'll probably still be the number one out in the West.
Mm-hmm.
How many teams from, like, the ACC or the SEC might end up out there because the Pac-12 has been so bad this year?
Well, multiple could, and that Gonzaga loss could affect so many. You know, when you're looking at this being a team that beat St. Mary's by 13, they only scored 47 points in that contest, so they struggled offensively. But if you pay close attention, the game before that, they played the 8th seed in that conference in Pepperdine, and Pepperdine hung 74 on them,
right,
although they ended up losing. So I don't think that Gonzaga is the overall number one. I think that their number one could be threatened, however, because you don't know how things are going to shake on the SEC between LSU, Tennessee, Kentucky. Same thing in the ACC. If Virginia does not win it, they're still a lock. But Duke or Carolina can come along and take that one bit as well. Then who knows? I mean, Sparty is right there. They won the conference championship. They could win the conference tournament, and they're right there kind of on the outside looking in. But it's interesting. It's really interesting, man. I'm excited about it.
Chris Goforth, Randy McMichael visiting with Deshaun Tate. He's joining us in studio. You can find his handiwork. Go online to 929thegame.com. You can also find him on the station's YouTube channel. He is everywhere, and he's always talking college basketball, and he's kind enough to spend a few minutes with us. Give me the mid-major team to keep an eye out for.
New Mexico State. I'm going right off the bat. I like New Mexico State out of the WAC conference.
No hesitation there, Randy.
None whatsoever.
None at all.
And if some way, somehow, and I know that Murray State ended up getting in by winning the conference tournament, but if one way or another Belmont just so happens to slip up in there. I think that they could be another one. But those are probably my strongest. I know people love Buffalo, and there's a couple other teams that are out there.
What about Wofford?
What about Wofford, yeah.
I mean, Wofford's right there, but I think that Wofford's got a lot of eyes on them right now. And when you start looking at kind of quote-unquote one-man teams.
Yeah, Fletcher McGee now, yeah, the kid can – I mean, he can
Jr. almost. But here's the thing. We were talking about before the show, we were in the bullpen, and Chris was saying – could they be a 9-10 seed in the area? We're talking about Wofford?
Yeah, but potentially. I think that they could probably get a little bit better than that.
Really?
They could potentially get a 7. I could see Wofford maybe getting a 7. But, you know, they're small in the front court, and I don't really like that necessarily. But this is what college basketball is about. Around this time of the year, you can roll out there with a 6'7" center, and you can beat a team. You know, we saw Buffalo do it in the first round last year against Arizona, so we'll see.
Well, the way this game has changed, Deshaun, especially over the last 20, 25 years, it has become more guard-centric now, mm-hmm. and having that, you know, that seven-footer, you know, in the middle that you had to have back in the 90s to be dominant, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, no, it's not the case anymore, and I love it. I mean, you get put in this position where – start talking about the mid-majors and a lot of those teams that have 6'7", 6'8", you know, centers and things like that. You know, they're just waiting and itching at an opportunity to show that they can play on the big stage with a lot of the, you know, with a lot of the powerhouse, you know, programs and Power 5 programs and things of that nature. And it is really built around guards. And you look at everything that basketball is about today, it's about the guards. But you start to slowly see it. Kind of transition towards it being about the wings a lot too. Guys that, can you run? Yes, I can do that. Can you jump? Yes, I can do that. 6'7", 6'8", you know, wiry kind of guy that is a slasher. All of those things, man, you put that with a guard and they can knock off any big boy.
Deshaun, thanks for hanging out, man.
Appreciate
you guys for having me, man. Appreciate you.
All right, Deshaun Tate, check him out. Head over to 929thegame.com. You can find more of his work there. And, of course, you can catch him on various shows over the course of the next week. As we head towards March Madness, Brian Jordan will talk a little Braves baseball with us next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio. Get a chance to visit with him. It's brought to you by Atlanta Peach Movers. Try to connect with Brian. Talk a little Braves baseball with him. Randy, we've talked a lot about the Braves over the last couple of hours and the amazing streak that Ronald Acuna is on, going 8-for-8 with 9 at bats. Or 8-for-8 in his last 9 at-bats with the Braves, couple of home runs. Kevin Gausman, I thought, had a great quote. If you haven't seen the story, you can go to MLB.com. It's a story that Mark Bowman wrote, and Kevin Gausman said that he says Ronald Acuna gets out of bed hitting triples.
Seems like it, doesn't it?
He is in such a – I mean, he's just on such a streak. Was there ever a point for you, especially playing in the NFL – where, and you played with some really good guys, Phillip Rivers being one, was there ever a moment when you just knew, not just for one game, but it was for, you know, a string of games where you just knew this guy is in a zone much different than the rest of us?
Oh, yeah. I can go back to early in my career, playing with Jason Taylor the year he won Defensive Player of the Year. We weren't that good, but he was unbelievable that year. Unbelievable. Zach Thomas making plays. The greatest rushing season I've ever been a part, one of I've ever seen, was my first year in Miami when Ricky Williams was there. And he led the league in rushing that year. And to watch that dude run the football.
Was he a good teammate?
Yes.
Was he?
Yes. Very good teammate. There.
He didn't seem to be quite as strange. In Miami as he was in New Orleans.
No, Ricky's just different. He's just a different kind of cat. But, no, he's the best teammate you can ever have. He was a good dude, man. Let's see. Watching when I first got to San Diego, watching Antonio Gates play on one foot and just be as dominant. Like I said, I've been double covered before. I've never seen – a team double vice, like on a punt team, when you mm-hmm. do the double vice the gunner. I've never seen a team do that to a player. And I was like, and I'm looking at Gates, I'm like, okay, well, I got single coverage over here. They double covered him. Like, just grab it. You're not going to beat us. I mean, when you have teammates that can get in that kind of zone, like Acuna got, because it got to a point where last year when you're watching this young man play, he's like, he can't do it again. And then He can't do it again. I mean, that's where you were with him. Like, goodness gracious, this young man, he's special, and we hope that he will be around a long time. And we hope he doesn't have to get to a point where, you know, he don't want to be here anymore because y'all want to mess around with his money. Because that's what it's going to come down to eventually. Because they got to pay him, right? Sooner than later.
Sooner or later, he's going to have to get paid. And that goes back to something we talk about, these new rules that are coming in Major League Baseball. One of the things that the players want to do is they want to move away from the service time and how teams are able to manipulate the service time. Remember, we went through this with Acuna. You had to keep him down.
I agree.
Keep him down until you can bring him up because so you can get that extra year.
And that's not fair.
No, it's not.
It's not fair at all.
Not for a guy that's ready.
Yeah, it's not fair at all. And when we were talking in the 12 o'clock hour about this collective bargaining, whatever you want to call it, about to come up, this needs to be addressed because there's no reason why Aaron Judge can't get his big deal yet. There's no reason why he's still making pennies. I mean, it's not pennies, but baseball pennies.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about this $1 million to the Home Run Derby winner.
Aaron Judge is going to get in it.
But that's more money that he'll make playing all year for the Yankees.
Correct. That is correct.
By winning the Home Run Derby, he'll make more money than he will playing all year for the Yankees.
How about that? Again, not fair. It's not fair that you got these young studs who are they're entitled to that because they go out and ball, you know, and I've never seen it in baseball where, you know, like you just saw with Antonio Brown, you see it a lot in basketball, just force their way out. Like, hey, you know what? I don't want to play here no more because you won't give me my money.
Well, we saw it with Brown. We saw something happened with OBJ, right? In New York, he wanted gone.
I mean, eventually, I mean, you're going to see more of that, man. We're not waiting for free agency. You know what? Trade me or I'm going to be a quote-unquote locker room cancer or whatever. Oh, I'm sorry. Clubhouse. You know, I know people like the technical term. Clubhouse cancer.
It's a locker room. We know what you mean.
Yeah.
We know what you mean. But the give and take that's going to have to go on in baseball to structure what baseball looks like. Look, we haven't had, you know, baseball has been pretty consistent from a work stoppage or lack thereof work stoppage. Baseball has been pretty consistent for a long time now. They haven't dealt with labor issues of late.
Of late, yeah, because you remember that strike.
It almost
destroyed. And you know what brought it back? Steroids.
If it was not for Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, exactly. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. Because there were a lot of people who, I mean, of all the things to take away, and I still think, and I know the Expos were leading, I still think the Braves would have won that second World Series that year.
It's a good chance.
Had it not been taken away. I still think they would have, I think they were better, and I think they would have come back and been able to take a second World Series had we not have lost it to a work stoppage. But baseball, since that time, they've got their act together. They've tried to clean the game up, I think. But it's interesting to see what the give and take will be between the player side and the owner side.
Yeah, and the only problem I have with baseball is the fact they don't really pump their young stars enough. And if you look at
– I think, you to know, your point, Randy, part of the problem that baseball suffers from now as opposed to, say, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago
– they're losing the young audience.
At that, well, there's that, but also too, I think baseball has become more regionalized now.
Oh yeah, no question about that.
Baseball has become more. It's gone less of being a more national sport and more about being a regional sport. I'm guilty of that. I watch the Braves at least a couple of times a week, but it's rare for me that I will turn on the Mariners, the Yankees, the Indians. I just don't. Now, sometimes if there's a pennant race, you know, we get into August and September, then maybe I start to look at some of those other teams. But the rest of the time, I'm guilty of that.
Oh, I'm all the way guilty. I'm not watching during the regular season unless it's a marquee matchup like a Sox-Yankees or something like that. I'm not sitting down watching. I'm watching the Braves pretty much all the time. All the time. So, it irks me, that arbitration thing. It really, can you tell that it's irking me right now? Because I'm like, dude.
I can tell. You look disgusted.
Dude, it just irks me. Are you just going to – this man, he has worked his butt off to get this loot, but yet you want to like, well, according to the bylaws of the agreement between the players
and
the
player. Exactly what it – and that's exactly what it is put in for, is to try to keep those salaries down. And it's, you know, and I think the players now have reached that. If you saw the tweets that came out, Justin Verlander was one. He's been very outspoken about it, about the lack of salaries that have been doled out, the lack of movement these last 2 years in free agency. Guys are not happy with the way things are going in the baseball offseason right now.
No, and it's just not Verlander, but he has spoken up. It's been a lot of guys speaking up. And it, because, Chris, it's been the second year in a row, even though you've seen the big deals from Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, you've seen the big deals or whatever, it's still going too slow. It's like Bryce Harper, and I'm sure he had something to do with it. He should have not have been signed this late. It should have been done already.
Right. And you've still got Keuchel. Yes. He's still looking for a job.
Kimbrel.
You still got Kimbrel, who's looking for a job.
He shouldn't be looking too far, man. There's a place here, this city called Atlanta, you know, that can use a guy like him.
But I don't blame the Braves. If he's asking for 5+ years, I don't blame the Braves for wanting to get something that's a little more team-friendly, because I think you got to look out for your side, too. You know, I'm all about Kimbrel getting his, but you got to be thinking long-term here about this franchise right now and the way it's constructed, because as we talked about earlier, Braves are built. Can they win now? Yeah, but I think they're built to win for the next couple of years, too.
And how does he affect that?
Well, I don't think you want to be saddled with a guy on the backside of his career making big money at 38 years old.
I got you. Okay. Just making sure. I still take him. Still want him. But what would be sufficient for you? What, 3 year?
3 years is
3 years
awesome.
Three years.
3 years with an option for a fourth.
Three for 60, something like that?
Yeah. I'm good with that. Because he's been the guy. He was the guy last year that I wanted. Heck, I wanted to trade for him if we could get him available and get him back here last year. And if you can get him as a free agent, let's do it.
Why not? But they're talking about this closer by committee, and I just ain't feeling that.
That scares me. And it, I don't know. You just don't know what you're going to get with AJ Minter sometimes. And that's...
That's the scariest of a scariest thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And at least when you talk about, when you start talking about Kimbrel, you know what you're getting. We've been there. We've done that. We've seen that before. And with Minter and Vizcaino, because that's what they're talking about, with those two guys sharing the closing duties, it's a little scary.
It's not a big fan of it.
No, me either. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Chris Goforth, Randy McMichael. Glad to be with you on this Thursday afternoon. Atlanta Falcons free agency today. Falcons signed tight end Luke Stocker to a 2-year deal, a guy that has some experience playing for tight end coach Mike Mularkey, a former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, so he's been in the NFC South before, spent last year with the Tennessee Titans. And now he is a Falcon where he will be the second tight end behind Austin Hooper.
I think I like Snook. I think it's an upgrade of what they've had, and he's a guy that he can set the edge in the run game. A guy that can kind of get downfield a little bit, has a little bit more athleticism than what you had in front of you, and ahead of Paulson and Toilolo. But the biggest thing is the familiarity that he has with this offense. A dirt cutter, like you said, he did play for Mike Mularkey. So I do like the fit. I like to feel a little bit more because, I mean, when Paulson was in majority of the time, you knew it was run. Luke, majority of the time is going to be run, but he can get behind you if you're sleeping, you know, do a little play-action pass and throw a little dump to him over the middle.
How many tight ends do you need?
Three.
I mean, you carry three?
Yeah, three. Oh, that's your Baltimore. They got like six of them. But, yeah, no more. I've never been on a team with more than three.
Do you spend a draft pick on one?
No.
If you're the Falcons?
No.
No?
No. I mean, if you're going to do something later, but it's not a position of great need. I was talking to my man Dave Arch. He was in here a little while ago, and we were talking about this. And I had a question, what does that say about Saubert? And, well, we know he can't block, but they did get a little more trust in him as the season progressed. You know, Matt Ryan threw him a couple more passes or something like that, but – Yeah, I think they're fine with their three guys. Now they bring somebody in to compete during the summers and all that, and has a chance to maybe put Saubert out of a job. Yeah.
So where do the Falcons go in the draft then?
Oh, they gotta go defense. They gotta go defensive line, interior. They gotta find a young offensive lineman.
What do you think about Cody Ford at Oklahoma?
I love Cody Ford, and that's the guy me and Arch had throughout there. If he's there at 14, do you take a chance on him?
Do you go offensive line over defensive line in the early round or in the first round?
I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't. And I like Cody Ford now. I mean, I think he is a guy that, you know, I think the most impressive thing about him, if you watched Oklahoma, is how well he runs, Randy.
How
he can get out in front on a screen and stuff like that. That's what I like the most about him. But I am of the opinion that you're beginning to tweak this offensive line through free agency.
Yes.
You're getting known entities. Are they elite? Probably not, but they are guys, if you can at least keep Matt Ryan standing up.
He should not take as many hits and sacks as he took last year.
Yeah, and he got hit a lot.
A lot.
He got hit a lot last year. So if you can do that, then I think you go, to your point, go heavy, especially on the defense.
I would go defensive line, defensive end. You got to get another corner in here.
And the great part about that, Randy, is, you know, the defensive line, defensive tackle in particular, this is a very deep draft. I mean, there will be quality there at 14 for the Falcons at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I think there will be somebody there that they can look at and draft. But here's a name, Chris, that, you know, that's been that me and Chucker and some other guys we've been talking about. Why isn't Dinerson not being like, okay, he's our starter? He's our starter at the other defensive tackle opposite of Grady. We just overlooked the fact that they drafted D lineman in the third round last year, right?
Right.
When do you think he would be moving up to starting position since you got rid of everybody?
You would think.
You would think so, right?
You would think.
Just interested about that.
I think that's a question that needs to be that's going to have to be answered at some point.
Yeah. Now,
it may not come till training camp, but it's something that's going to have to be answered. Do you subscribe when it comes to the draft? Everybody has a different philosophy. I believe in you draft by need.
I'm also, yeah.
Yeah, you draft by need. I'm not a fan of the idea of, well, let's go get the best player available.
No.
I want to solve a need through the draft.
Always. There's no reason to sit there and if you don't need a wide receiver, but the best wide receiver is on the board. You go take him when you need a D lineman. If you're a D lineman, if you can get him maybe a couple picks behind that, why don't you trade back and all those things and collect more picks? I'm always for need.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, because to me, you go from – that's how you build a team, and I still subscribe to the idea that championship teams are built through the draft. I think you complement through free agency,
yeah,
but you build it through the draft.
Yeah.
And by taking on that philosophy of let's go get the best available player, you're not building a team, you're collecting players.
Yes.
That's what they're like football cards at that point. Well, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to collect Montana – and, you know, I wanted Montana. I wanted Walter Payton. I wanted Jerry Rice. I wanted those guys. Mm-hmm. That's who I wanted to collect. Well, when you're trying to build a team, it's just a different mindset.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's, okay, we'll find somewhere to put him. No, if he's not what you need at that particular time, go find somebody else. But he's a hell of a player.
Falcons head coach Lloyd Pierce coming up later on in this hour. We'll also get to some NFL free agency moves, some other moves outside of what the Falcons did. We'll get to that coming up next. Chris Goforth, Randy McMichael, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This is John Feinstein with the CBS Sports Minute, sponsored by Home Advisor. Find top-rated pro.
Braves general manager Alex Anthopoulos talking about the National League East and the moves that have been made. Sat out on the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in a former Brave, Brian Jordan, joins us. Brian's appearance brought to you by Atlanta Peach Movers. Brian, we've talked a lot today about Ronald Acuna and what has been not just an unreal spring overall, but 8-for-8 in his last 9 at-bats. Is there anybody, in watching this kid play, is there anybody from your era that comes to mind when you watch Ronald Acuna?
Wow, from my era?
How old are you, Brian?
I know. I got to go way back, fellas. I got to go way back. I mean, really, nobody, man. I'm going to be honest. I mean, this kid is very, very young and doing some extraordinary things. You know, everybody's concerned about a sophomore slump, but that's one guy that I'm not concerned about, man. I've watched him make some adjustments last year. He's just a five-tool guy, man. He loves the game. He enjoys having fun, and he loves to be out there every second of the day. So, I mean, he's, again, you know, Andrew Jones, that's what he reminds me of, but I think he's a better hitter overall than Andrew Jones.
Where should he hit in the Braves lineup?
Well, for me, ideally, I think he's a number three hitter. I mean, he's your best hitter in the lineup, right. You know, not to take anything away from Freddie Freeman. But ultimately, normally you bet that at that number three spot, it's your best hitter, a guy that can not only hit home runs, drive the ball in the gap, scores a lot of runs, and he has it all. And but right now you got Freddie at number three. So I like him at leadoff, but I think he'll drive in over 100 runs hitting behind Freddie Freeman.
I mean, and I think it's more or less where he's comfortable at and everything. And I mean, everybody's been banging on the pitchers, pitching staff. I want to sit with the position players. What is your initial reaction to Tyler Flowers being the guy who's going to catch the majority of the games this year?
Well, I like Tyler Flowers. He's a good defensive catcher. He calls a good game, and you know, if you get, I think he's a good hitter, decent hitter, not a great hitter, but. You know, for a catcher, that's what you want, a guy that can call a good game, play good defense, and you'll take whatever he gives you offensively. But he's got a lot of young guys that he can help, and that's the thing. You have to have a good catcher that knows the game of baseball, knows how to throw hitters to be in control. I mean, he's the mentor for a lot of these young guys. And, you know, it's good to have Brian McCann also, a guy who's been there, done it. Year after year. So you got two really good veteran catchers that can coach these young pitchers along.
Brian Jordan, the former Brave, with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we talk a little Braves baseball. You mentioned Brian McCann. He gives you that veteran presence in the clubhouse and a guy that I don't think anybody can question his leadership ability. He's struggled a little bit, Brian, with injuries in the past. What do you expect from him numbers-wise? What's realistic for Brian McCann?
You know, I think if Brian McCann is healthy, I mean, he's happy at home. People don't realize that makes a huge difference. When you're home next to the family, to where you started, it really gives you something to play for. And, you know, for him going to the Yankees and then the Astros, being away from the family, I mean, it's different. So now that he's back in Atlanta, I expect some great things. I think he's going to surprise us with some numbers. He's a left-handed hitter. If you can pull that ball at SunTrust, you're going to hit a lot of home runs out in right field. So, you know, I'm giving him a new life here at SunTrust Park, and I think he's going to have a terrific year. He may end up catching more than we ever thought. You know, he may be splitting right down the middle before it's all said and done with Flowers.
Brian, what's your, your expectations for the new third baseman, Josh Donaldson, this year?
I expect him to be the Josh Donaldson of a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's all about who you know, and Alex Anthopoulos had him in Toronto, so he's seen the great side of Donaldson, the guy that goes out there, shows good leadership, a guy that's in the clubhouse talking baseball, talking to young guys, educating them. Then he goes out there and perform. Unfortunately for him, he was injured the last couple of years, but I really feel like he's going to have a great bounce-back year. I think Alex was smart by just signing him to 1 year because now he has all the incentive in the world to go out here and do some terrific things and get a longer-term contract after this year. So I think that was just smart by Alex Anthopoulos, a guy that has seen him play at his best, and I think it's going to help this offense out tremendously.
Brian Jordan with us on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Brian, there's so much hype around so many of these young guys, not just pitchers, but a couple of guys in the field as well. I want your thoughts on Christian Pache, who seems like he's had a good spring thus far. How close is he to being big league ready?
Well, I mean, I think he's ready. You know, he goes over to Arizona, and I think he won the MVP. I mean, he had a terrific Arizona season. Everybody doubted his power, didn't think he had a lot of power. They know he could play great defense. But he's shown us that he has power. And he's shown us that he has all the five tools to be very successful. I think it's smart to get him some more at-bats down in minor league just to make sure that he's ready at the triple-A level. I think, but my personal feeling, I think he's ready to play in the big leagues. He's already shown it in spring training right now. He's getting off to a great start. He knows it's an opportunity for him to show his stuff. And a lot of guys, young guys, panic, and they try too hard and they struggle. But right now, I mean, he's out there. He belongs on the Braves team right now.
Brian, the guy that Josh Johnson stepped in for is Johan Camargo, and a guy who we didn't know what to expect until we saw him get that full-time third base gig last year. What are your expectations for him, and how much would we see him maybe a little bit more in the outfield this year?
Man, I love Johan Camargo. Although Donaldson was a great pickup, I hated it for Camargo because, to me, he could have been a gold glove third baseman, and he showed us in the second half of the season by leading the team in RBIs that his bat is coming around. I mean, he could be a 100 RBI guy from both sides of the plate. He has decent speed. He has the best arm on the team. But it's an unfortunate situation for him. But, you know, which puts more pressure on Dansby Swanson, because Dansby, the question marks are still out on him. He has to return from that wrist injury and get off to a great start, because, believe me, Alex Anthopoulos, Brian Snicker, and all those guys know that Camargo is chomping at the bit to be an everyday player. And he has the best arm, and he has great range at shortstop too. So, you know, watch out for that mix at shortstop.
Brian, what if Dansby Swanson, what if he is a 250 hitter? Is there still a place for him at the major league level in the Braves organization?
Well, it used to be, guys, where if you are a good defensive shortstop, you can get away hitting 230, 240.
Right.
But in today's game, I mean, you got to hit for power. I mean, it's all about the stats, analytics of the game. And they expect power out of these guys now. So it's not about, you know, hitting 250 and one home run, two home runs. That's not good enough anymore. If you're going to hit 250, you better be hitting about 30 home runs. And that's the expectation of a lot of these clubs now. So he's going to have to deliver not only defensively, but with the bat also.
Brian, you saw a lot of movement in the NL East this offseason with the Phillies bringing in some big names. We know that the young talent that the Nationals have, the Mets have gotten better. Do you feel the same confidence coming into this year after last year than you did before they made all those movements?
I'm going to be honest, man. You know, you look at the Phillies, you look at the Nats and Corbin at pitching. I mean, they have a fantastic pitching staff along with Philadelphia and you know, McCutchen. We're talking about Bryce Harper, but, man, they got McCutchen, they got Segura, and they got Realmuto at catcher, and they already had a pretty good offense. So you know that has to be the front runner in the East coming into the season. The Mets have done a tremendous job. So, you know, last year we had no expectations. I thought it was going to be a long season, the young guys just learning the game. But, you know, these young guys really stepped up to the plate, won the division. And this year, you know, it's high expectations on the Braves. But it's going to be a fun year, because I think the East is strong, probably one of the strongest divisions in baseball right now. So, you know, the jury is still out. I think we're talented. I think we can win the division again, but a lot of good things are going to have to go our way.
Brian Jordan on with Chris and Randy here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we talk a little Braves baseball. Brian, as a former player, your thoughts on what we have seen, not just this offseason, but really the last two off seasons, with kind of a slow free agent market. I know there's some guys, Randy and I talked earlier about some tweets that Justin Verlander and other guys had put out over the course of the winter about teams not spending money. Your thoughts on what's transpired these last two off seasons?
Well, it's been weird, guys. And, you know, if you're in the Players Association, you got to be looking very hard at what's going on. You know, now I think the owners are getting to the point where they want to just pay one or two guys, and there's no in-between anymore. Once you hit 30, 31, you're considered old in this game. You're not getting the long-term deals. So you're starting to see a bad trend starting to happen in Major League Baseball. Last year, I was fortunate enough to go down to IMG and work out with those free agents. There was so many free agents that Major League Baseball Alumni Association, Players Association had to step in and really run a camp. We had to run a spring training camp for all these free agents just to keep them in shape, keep them ready for when they get the call. And this year it was pretty much the same thing. So, you know, everybody wants to stay away from the old collusion word, but obviously the owners are talking to one another and, you know, everybody seems to be on the same page.
Brian, appreciate it, man. Good stuff as always. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Appreciate you, Brian.
All right, Chris, Randy, take care, buddy.
All right.
Brian Jordan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.